Hi, everyone. I'm Jenny LePage, and welcome to the conversation about spiritual awakening, planetary shift in consciousness, adventure, healing, and finding your life path. Before I transport you to the Amazon River, listening to a booming thunderstorm roll by in the distance with all the sounds of the jungle around us. First, I would like to introduce our guest, Itzhak Beery. Itzhak Beery is a leading shamanic teacher, healer, speaker, community activist, and author of 3 Amazon best-selling books. He is the founder of ShamanPortal.org, the Andes Summit, and co-founder of the New York Shamanic Circle. And he is on major global spiritual centers faculties. Itzhak received the Ambassador of Peace Award from the Universal Peace Federation and the United Nations. I have had the great opportunity to study intensively with him the past 2.5 years, including intensive workshops, online trainings, and 2 trips to Ecuador. Our last trip was an apprenticeship training trip for practitioners, and I am so, so grateful to bring these powerful healing tools into my practice. And also, I'm thrilled to be able to share Itzhak's wisdom with all of you right now. Okay, everyone, hold on. Here we go. Here we have Itzhak Beery, and we are sitting on the Rio Agua Rico in the evening in the Amazon Basin, one of Itzhak's favorite spots. We can watch the sunset. There's a storm rolling in. All the creatures around us are singing together, and it is really nice to be here with you. Hi, Itzhak.
Hello. So nice to be with you, Jenny.
Itzhak is one of my favorite people. I'm learning so much from him. We are on a trip right now with a group of healers from the United States and a few other countries around the world. And Itzhak has brought us here to be with several tribes in the Amazon and the Andes, teaching us traditional healing practices. La Limpia ceremony is one of them. Itzhak, can you talk about why it's important to share the practice of La Limpia with us?
Well, the La Limpia ceremony is one of the most simplest and yet complex healing traditions of the Andes. In many cultures, actually, you have different type of limpia, which means it's a purification of the energy field outside the person or surrounding the person, and also within the person. The ceremony that I teach I study with a few shamans from the high Andes of Ecuador around the Otavalo area. It's a very distinctive ceremony that is built on a few distinct parts. Together they are creating a whole healing environment where a person return to balance. There is the first section of the limpia is the gazing, or the ability to see the energy field around the person and see what is he coming or she's coming for the healing without the person telling you, so that you're receiving information before you even start. Then we learn how to create the altar, the center piece of the shaman's work table, where he or she absorbing or receiving the energy that allow her to continue with the healing. And that on the healing table you have your waka, your sacred object, that could be crystals, that could be bells, that could be bones, that could be the healing stones. Each one of them have a specific emotional and spiritual connection to the shaman herself that give her the power to do the healing. And then there are two different ways or three different ways the shamans usually do the diagnostic reading, which is very important because without the diagnostic reading, it's like going to a doctor that just give you pills without checking what you have. And so we are using techniques of reading with the candle and candle flame. We are really using egg reading, where we are rolling the egg on the person's body and cracking it open on the and putting it in a glass of water and seeing the formation of the egg in the water. And then also palm reading, where we can tell what the client challenges and gifts and obstacles and life purpose through looking at the hand. So all those three diagnostic tools, sometimes used singularly or sometimes they use all of them, give us a beautiful picture of the person's condition right now at this particular moment. And then give us an idea of what kind of tools to use and what the procedure we do in the limpia. Traditionally, you use after the diagnostic, you do the cleansing of the energy field and extraction of negative energy from the body using using trago, which is a sugarcane rum. And then a bunch of green leaves, aromatic or not, to brush the energy field. Sometimes you use feathers to do that, and smoke or smudging. And then the rolling of the eggs on the body to absorb the negative energy, and sometimes sucking the energy from the body to extract negative energy, which is usually blockage energy in the body. And after we remove the negative energy, we are now in a position of blowing or bringing new energy to replace that energy that was taken out. And for that we're using Aqua Florida, which is a perfume made out of citrus flowers and other perfumes, and or we using carnations or red and white carnations or red and white roses, and that is to bring good energy to replace the old energy. And then after we create the wholeness, we are using stones. And the stones are here to create an energy field around the person's body, to crack open the back of the shoulders, to stimulate the lymph nodes, and to shake whatever energy still in the body to remove that, to send it away. And after the protection ceremony, we are doing using sound and the sound of bells. Sometimes we do bells or other instruments to shake the energy, and with a with a high pitch bell, we are using to harmonize the body, create body of that flow in the same vibrations. And then we are sometimes using spears to create more balance in the person's body, to make, to create more resolve or energy of the warrior, to send the person strong and powerful. Using tobacco to send the blessing to spirit, with blessing for the person. And then at the very end, we are using ukulele to like a small whistle to sing to the spirit to return it to the body, because or the soul of the person to return, because as we do the ceremony, people usually disappear into the ether, and which is what we want them to do, to reconnect to spirit. And that's that song, the whistle is usually a whistle that is imitating a bird, and the shamans of the Andes are called birdmen, and they wear a crown of feathers, and the whistle of the song of the behind their neck call on to this, to the spirit or the soul of person to return with the sound of the birds. And when we do that, after that, we are giving a person to rub their hands with beautiful, smelly seven essence of the Andes, which he brushes off her body to bring harmony and beauty to their life. Usually the ceremony could last between 20 to half an hour, sometimes more, depending on the person's conditions and what needs to happen. And it leaves the person in a state of harmony, clearing of the mind, groundness. And for many cases, it removes migraines, headaches, back pains, all kind of different physical conditions that are really the results of emotional imbalance. So the whole ceremony is about recreating balance in the person's body, to harmonize it, to return him to oneness, to return him to connect to the four elements, which we're using in the ceremony, in the earth, the grounding, the fire, the water, and the air. With that, the person feel more connected to nature and feel much more powerful.
Thanks, Isaac. You have been doing these La Limpia ceremonies, studying them, practicing for a few decades now, and you have talked about how you have seen miracles happen and amazing healing. Can you tell us a little bit about some of those stories?
Well, I had a woman once, she was heroin addict for 8 years, and she tried to clear herself from that. And she came to me for two sessions. And after two sessions, she was totally recovered.
Amazing.
And she found her calling, and she became what she wanted to become. She moved to a town where she wanted to live, and she never thought she can. And she got the profession that she wanted to get, and totally healed. She sent me her sister, who was clinically depressed, and with that sister, in one session, she returned to college and she got herself cleared. I had people who came with back pain for 20 years and this back pain disappeared. I had people who had urinary tract issues that were cleared. There were people with cancer that could not walk and they walked. And or people who were clinically depressed, who were, you know, after a few sessions, got their life back together. It's quite calm. I mean, for me, it doesn't look like miracles, because it's the whole premise of this work is to return a person to heat, to balance. And when you return a person to balance, the body heals itself. Or you're returning a person's soul back to where it needs to be, and they understand their life purpose. They get permission to pursue their life purpose. With the clearing, it helps them to feel more confident, to really pursue it with no guilt feeling, without no feeling that they are not talented enough or strong enough, or they don't care what other people say about them. Yes, I've seen, you can say miracles, but for me it's not so much miracles, as because I understand the process of that, and so maybe for people from the outside it looks like a miracle. You know, I had a woman who was, she's a Broadway music composer, who got stuck, could not move her career. And with two sessions, she was up into her craft, and she was working, completing her project, and it's amazing, no?
So it is about giving people, or allowing people, to reconnect to their soul purpose, and through clearing of the energy field, to remove all these obstacles.
You have talked about bringing a soul back to where it needs to be. Can you talk about what that means? What is it when you talk about a soul coming back from somewhere into the person's wholeness again?
In my experience, and I'm only authorized to speak for my experience. I really don't believe in anything. I only. If I experience something, this is the truth for me. The soul is an energy that is unique to each person, and each person comes to this world to experience life from that point of view. And reconnecting a person to that particular life purpose is probably the best gift you can give a person. Because when a person knows that this is his challenge or her challenge in life, it gives her a place to start working toward. And sometimes a person already knows what it is, but because of cultural pressure, because of the way parents treat them, they do not pursue it because of in many ways, sometimes it's like curses, you know. When another person from the outside see it through the palm reading, through the candle reading, through the egg reading, through all of that, it validates the person. And it gives him the courage to pursue it, in spite of all the obstacles that they had. And if they know that there are gifts which you can see in the palm which are written 3 months before you were born, which is the map of your life, it gives you more determination to pursue it, to go after it, more validation. And that's the inner voice that most people have, but let it go. And the thing about that is that when a person knows that he was born for something, or feel that, or even doesn't have the words to it, and if they don't pursue it, they feel depressed, they feel anger, they feel resentment and anger to people around him because he or she herself are not able to get to it. And that's very frustrating. And this frustration goes into other people all around you.
What a gift.
It is a gift. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best gift you can probably give someone, to validate or to show him the path that their life or their soul purpose, their soul wants to be recognized or to experience. What else there is? Right?
You've been talking about palm reading, and Itzhak, you have a book that you are working on right now, coming out, about palm reading, and I've been studying with you a bit, and it is amazing. I've been finding so helpful for people. Can you talk a little bit about your book and a little bit more about palm reading and how that works?
So palm reading is an art form or divination form that is thousands of years old. And you can find it in India, in China, in South America, and of course, gypsies and other places in Europe. It have a bad rap because, people associate it with, magic or gypsies or charlatans or things like that. But in South America, in Ecuador, at least two of my teachers use that regularly for divination. Or actually, there's one woman in Brazil in the Amazon too. And it turned out that 3 months before the baby, or 3 to 4 months before the baby is born, there is a surge of energy in the brain that start, but nobody knows exactly why. And in that surge of energy starts spreading around the body, creating the nervous system. But it's also creating the limb, and it's creating the palm major lines, and it create also the fingerprints. And the fingerprints and the major line don't change. And they are the imprints. As I understand, that shows you the map of your life, or the blueprint of your life. And then there is a question, of course, about if that's the case, is your life has already been written for us, or do we have a room for change? So in many ways, yes, our soul came to experience certain things, but you have to choose in what way you achieve that. So from that part of change and choices, that is the part you need to work on, and that's the healer way of
helping the person to navigate their canoes, the life canoes. But the North Star is there. There is only one North Star. There is only one unique life purpose for each person that they came here to experience. Now, not every life purpose is something that you like. most time, if you recognize, if you are able to recognize the narrative of your trauma, the trauma shows you what do you need to work on. In other words, if you always been shut down, not allowed to speak your mind in every situation in your life, most likely your life purpose is to be a public speaker. That is the issue that you need to work on. And so every time that you speak up, there is an obstacle. But that is exactly the issue that you need to work on. So if any one of your listeners who wants to know what their life purpose is, map your trauma in life, and then see what is the narrative, what is the how do you connect the dots between them, and then turn it around and see what is your life purpose. For instance, people, as you know, with long index finger, that they are came here to experience authority, and most likely they don't like authority. They probably are very critical of anybody who is in the authority position. They most likely always feel that they don't have an authority. And so authority is really the issue that what they came here to, the authentic authority. If you know that, don't put yourself to work as a secretary. Don't put yourself as a working as a secondary person. You'll have to figure out how you own your own authority, not to get mad at everybody. Or if you are an introvert, right? Find yourself a position that you need to go deeper into you. Or don't look for jobs to be an extrovert, because that will really not work for you. So all of those issues, the way to look at, beside if you know how to raise a hand, but in a way you want to know what your soul purpose, you take a look at all the, I ask you in my workshop, I ask people to take, to journey and take, remind yourself of 10 different traumas in your life, and then connect them. Find one or two words that describe them.
And that leads us to our life purpose.
That would be your life purpose. Now, that doesn't mean sometimes that you have to be a healer or a truck driver or a nurse, or because a nurse, which is a service or healer in many ways, can come to her life purpose from authority. And it's nothing to do with service. Nothing to do with being a healer. But she might want to be authority. And so if that's the case, and I've seen that, what she needs to do is to become the head nurse. So she doesn't really do the service, but she is more the administrator. She's more the organizer. She's giving the direction. So she is, with her life purpose, doing service work. So it's the place where you come to do your work.
So this...
Not the work itself. You could be a bus driver and do a healer work, because you can welcome every passenger. You can ask them how they do. Then you can remember their name. That's healing.
So it doesn't matter what we do, just how we do it.
Exactly. From the place where you come to do this work.
It gives people peace.
Yes, absolutely.
Sometimes you see people who are doing, you know, like mundane work, work that nobody give them any credit for, and they are truly happy because they do it from the place of their heart or the place of their soul, and they feel fulfilled.
This is going to be a good book. Do you have a name for this? Do you have your title picked out yet?
The working title is Shamanic Palm Reading, or maybe Palm Wisdom.
We'll find out soon.
Yes, and in that book I bring also different takes from the shamanic perspective, like the four elements, the sun and the moon, the stars, the rivers of life, the river of heart, the river of life, heart and mind. So it's all part of that, but also some stories about palms that are how shamans relate to the palm. For instance, what is the thumb? The thumb is the representation of God, because God connects all four fingers. Each finger is each race: the white, black, brown, and yellow, or red. So. And all humanity is one palm, right?
Mm-hmm.
The palm is also a tree. Our hands in the shamanic tradition is a representative of a tree. It comes from the heart or from the body or the earth, and it grows from the blood of the mama, and it creates a tree. And the palm. And the palm is the trunk of the tree, and then all of these are the branches that are calling to Tata Inti for the sun. So there's that, and there's the element of the three worlds: the lower world, middle world, and upper world, or childhood, midlife, and future. So there's so much symbolism with that. But one of the things that I also discovered, that not every person has five fingers, you know, sometimes they have six. So there's a lot of discoveries within that book that kind of, in many ways, rediscovering our relationship to palms. You know, most people don't even look at their palms. They are always busy working with their hands, but they don't really pay attention to this, all this information that are in their hands and what it's symbolizing. For instance, we count to tens, right? All our systems built on tens. Why ten? Because we have 10 fingers. And why 20? Because we have 20 fingers. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The Mayan, their system is counting for 20. The 20 Naguals. It's so much embedded in our cultures in many different ways. And I look at in the Hebrew tradition, Yud, which is the name of God, is the 10 fingers. Hey, which is God itself, is representing the 5. So there's a lot of within our culture, in our prayers, you know, that is connected to our hands. I mean, besides that, you know, there's so many language that is connected to the hand. It's such a beautiful way of, but it's also an incredible tool. And I think that's what's so important, because when a person know how to read it and a client come to you, you don't even have to ask too much. You look at the hands and you already know the picture. Is this a earthy hand, or is it a fiery hand, or if it's a watery hand, or if it's air. So each persona is already written in the hand. So if somebody comes to you with a fire hand and you start to talk philosophy, you're gonna lose that person. Or if an airy man or a person comes with long fingers and all philosophies and ideas, and you are very grounded, and you talk to him business, you lose him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way to meet the person in wherever the person is, without making him wrong or not. Or if you go deeper into it, you remember then the idea of relationship. If a person is independent and not needy, you know immediately in your relationship. So you don't have to waste time with the wrong partner.
Yes, so you can look at partner palms.
Yes.
Family dynamics.
Yeah, family dynamics. I mean, I have and that's one of my favorite now, is to work with families. You know, as I told you, I had a couple of weeks ago, a woman who brought me identical twins. And it was fascinating to see that identical twins have identical hands with different markers, which means they are identical, but each one of them have a different life purpose. Similar, but different. And the similarity and the difference of them make it very difficult for them, because they feel very connected and very apart. And so they push and pull. But when you explain that to the parents, they are able to give room for these two to grow independently, not to demand that they both will be identical. They have to find the differences between them and nourish them, encourage them. So it's beautiful. It's really resolving. I think it's a mandatory in many ways for parents when they have a child to do a reading right after they're born. You already know what the person would be.
That's so helpful.
I did it all to all my kids and all my grandchildren.
Mm.
And so I know there's one person who's just totally independent, and there's nothing you can do, and you can see that in all his life. He's doing whatever he wants. There's nothing wrong with it.
That's who he is.
It's wrong with it if the parents don't like it.
Mm.
But it's nothing wrong if you know that. There's nothing you can fight. The more you fight that child, the more angry, the more separations will be, the more problems in the future.
It helps everyone.
Absolutely. And if the parents are very independent and the kid is very needy, and that he's looking for love and intimacy and acknowledgement and appreciation, and they don't give it to him, then you create problems with that. He would always will feel abandonment. And but if they recognize, and I had a mother like this not long ago, that she had a totally separate lines of relationship, and she have a child who is incredibly dependent, needy, and it drives her crazy. So her work is to learn how to give up herself without losing herself. That's almost her life purpose.
And now she knows.
now she, even if she doesn't like it, she gives time for her daughter to snuggle with her, to read her a book. Even if she personally sometimes feel dislike it, not liking it. But if she will reject her daughter will become more dependent on her, more needy, and more angry. And that anger could be developed later on to separation from the mother, and then she will, that daughter will find somebody who she can be intimately close to. So that's why it's so important to know the life purpose of a person as early as possible, so you can create the conditions to meet their life purpose, not to go against it.
So helpful. You mentioned the thumb being the God finger, and you've talked about it being connected to Ushai, the fifth element. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So in the Andes tradition, they recognize the importance of the four elements within our body. The legs representing the earth. These are the roots of a tree that are going deep into the ground and create groundness. And then above that, the earth, you have the fire. The fire is the place of power, the cauldron of fire that bring passion, action to the world, and transformation. And then above that, you have the cauldron of water, and the cauldron of water is the cauldron of emotion. All that area is an area of change that is constant change, like the lungs, kidneys, liver, you know, all of them, heart. It is always, the emotions is in could be one moment you'll be angry, one moment you'll be loving. It's always changing. And then from the neck up is the element of air, which is like the thoughts, the philosophy, the ego, that place of spirit in a way. But the element of earth is the element of the feminine energy that comes from Mother Earth, from the lava, from the gravitation, from the life-giving forces. The element of the fire is the element of the masculine energy. The more fire you have in your pelvis, in your sexual energy, the more you can boil the emotion, the cauldron of water. And the more steam in the emotion, the more excitement there are your emotion, the more steam comes through your throat and goes into the crown of your head and go up and meet the fifth element. The fifth element is the Ushai. It is the all the four elements together, the culmination of all that energy. It contains all the female, male, female, male, and nothing, all gender. And so some people call it ether, but it's not really in that tradition. It's really more of the oneness of all elements. It's the element that contains everything. And when we do the Olympia, the idea here is to reconnect the person into the Ushai, into the fifth element, by grounding the person, building up fire in the locomotive, boiling the water to create excitement. So there'll be a more expression coming through the throat, the head,
to the Ushai, to reconnect with that energy of power of unity. And when a person connects with that, oftentimes it is not a place of words, it's a place of being. It's a place of God. It's the place of reconnecting to the cosmos. And there's nothing more beautiful when you are one with the cosmos.
That is so important. And it seems really important right now in this time on planet Earth, where we have so many people who feel challenged, and we see all the changes happening and challenges and struggles, and that seems to be an opportunity, a great opportunity for us to connect with a higher force and bring in a sense of spirit where we might not be feeling that. Do you notice that the people that you are helping, that you're working with, that you are supporting, that they find a little bit of hope and direction in connecting them with this Ushai, with the fifth element?
You know, right after the Olympia, that is where people are experiencing that. There's a sense of happiness. There's a sense of lightness. There's a sense that this huge black energy removed from you, that you're free. And it's hard to describe really in words, you know. It's really more of a feeling. But most of the time, when you are in the magic part of that, creating the environment of the Olympia, people connect to that. In the way you can see it sometimes, is they forget to come back. You know, after the ceremony, it's almost like they want to stay there. And sometimes you have to wake them up. I mean, that's the whistle behind the neck. Is that really a calling for spirit to come back, calling to the soul to come back, because they are at the Ushai. They are becoming one with, and they don't want to come back. I don't blame them, because this is the best the best place to be. Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of that, you know.
And then how do we integrate that and walk into our path?
The issue really is how do you integrate that feeling or that knowing, that experience that you receive in the Olympia, and come back to your everyday life. That sometimes could be an issue. And but as far as I know, Olympia do change people's lives, and they remember that experience with the Ushai or with that oneness, and they slowly start to change their consciousness or the way they experience life, or the awareness that they put into life, and starts to integrate it into their life with small things, in the way they respond to people, in the way they see people, in the way they pursue their work without, you know, the consideration of what other people thinking. But it's a process. But I can see how fast it happened.
So they're coming from a place of they're coming from a place of wholeness. They feel more connected, and then they're bringing that into
into
daily
the,
life.
Yeah. I think that one of the things we talk about, this life purpose, is that if you are married to somebody who wants to take vacations all the time, or is a salesperson, or is always find an excuse to go somewhere else, if you look at their hands, and or if you don't look at their hands, but if you accept that they have a different life purpose than yours, and allow them to experience that, and not nag them, but find ways that they will experience your life purpose. So I think the best marriages or partnerships with people is when you recognize the other person's life purpose and you support it. Not try to change them to support yours. And if they support you and you support them, then you can have partnership.
That's a good partnership. Itzhak, you feel so inspired to share and teach all this information that you are downloading to your students right now, to people who are listening and people who are studying with you, reading your books, going on trips with you, taking your classes, following the shaman portal. You have talked about when you first learned La Limpia, for instance, it took you 3 years.
Yes.
And you're really teaching this information at a pace that it feels really mandatory that you pass this on, that you spread this into the world. What is it that makes you feel so compelled to share so much?
Well, when I started 27 years ago, I was really lucky. I never set up to actually do that or learn it. It has really happened to me. But at that time, there was still... There are still some of those still alive, but they recognize that the indigenous teachers, they recognize that their sons and daughters don't want to do that anymore. And they, in many ways, decided to pass their knowledge to people from the West. Of the North. I was one of them. And I recognize how important and how magical, well, magical, if you know, I saw it as magical at that time, it is. And how fast. Or what happened in the last 25 years that those information can get lost. And my mission was to, or my legacy would be to record as many as possible information or teachings or practices or way of thinking, philosophy, to preserve it. I'm not doing it just to preserve theirs, but I also do it to preserve ours, because I believe that their knowledge and technology of the ancient or the indigenous world, it is so important to preserve humanity. I think it's so easy for people in the West to think that pharmaceutical companies were always there, that oil companies were always there, the electricity was always there, that iPhone was always there, that Britney Spears was always there, that, you know, all these Hollywood movies were always there. That's not true. For thousands of, whatever, 100,000 of years, people lived in beautiful harmony with nature. They learned how to preserve the environment, to live in harmony with it, so they can have whatever they need to for their living. They learn every secret of every plant to heal their body, their soul. And that technology, what makes us human, living with nature, not separate from nature. And I think that that's, if we don't remember that, where are we going? We're going to a dead end. It's totally destruction. And you could see it here, right? You saw here, you saw the oil fields, and you saw here the palm oil from the river all the way to Shushufindi. It's disgusting. They're cutting the forest, and they're making the indigenous people here slaves for the landowners. All the oil companies are employing the indigenous people and giving them Coca-Cola and potato chips, replacing the yucca and replacing the good food that they have here, the wholesome food. It's kind of ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that my commitment is really to help and preserve the Amazon and the Andes way of living, the traditional way of living for them, but it's also for us to remind us where we come from, that there's an alternative way to globalizations and colonialization and to corporate greed and to all of that. It's paramount for humanity to remember the connection to nature and to how to live in balance with nature, with harmony, to honor that beauty that we have here, and the resources that we have here.
You talk a lot about how we not just want to choose one or the other, not just living the traditional life, not just living the new life with all our technology, but really joining that mind and heart and bringing some of the technology of the West that might be really helpful for the people who don't have that, and trading some of that, sharing the heart that we don't have so much in the West, and that we need both.
So, in South America, in the Andes, there is a prophecy of the eagle and the condor. This was taught to me by Alberto Tazzo from the Andes, who passed away this year, unfortunately. Mm. He died of in results of the COVID.
Mm.
The prophecy claim or prophesied that there would be time, which starts in 1993 or around that time, and would last for 500 years. The previous Pachacuti, the previous 500 years, were 500 years of occupations of the Western world, or Europe, or the white person, and in South America, and the colonization of the tribes, and those 500 years were genocide
90% of all South America indigenous world were decimated.
North America too, yeah.
Yes. And it was decimated by the disease of biological warfare that they brought with their ships. And it was by gunpowder and horses, which the native here did not have. But these people here had technology and architectures and cities and technology that was incredibly powerful, even sometimes more powerful than the European.
Mm-hmm.
This is, we don't really learn much about. So 500 years after the occupation of the killing of Atahualpa, the last emperor of the Inca, 500 years later, 1993, this new, around that time, which actually started a little bit before and continue now, the shamans of the Andes and shamans of the Amazon recognize that the time has come to share their information with us. The prophecy means that the eagle represent the people of the West, the people who have technology and wisdom and warfare and military and corporations and all this technology, will share their information with the people of the Condor. The people of the Condor is the people that work, that come to do their work from their heart, which is what the connection to the earth. And so these two birds, the prophecy said that they will learn to fly together in the blue sky, in dance of harmony and cooperation. And the prophecy said that it will be the return of the feminine energy into the world, which is, doesn't say that women will control the world, but it means that the heart and the mind will start cooperating.
We need that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely we need. We need to make a decision that comes from heart and mind together, not just mind, which is represented by the corporations, the oil companies and palm oil and pharmaceutical and the military and the big corporations. Or the multinational corporations that are basically all they care is money, and money represents the eagle. The condor represent community, represent rebirth. It's only eating what's already dead. They don't kill. They live in community. They eat only what they need and leave the rest for others. They don't build a nest. They nest on the cliffs, as you saw there.
Mm-hmm.
So it is two different energies, and these two energies are also within ourselves, within each of us. And when we talk about in Olympia, about the balance or recreating balance or recreating the unity, is the creating the unity of the masculine and the feminine energies within each of us. So that dance of the condor and the eagle have to come from within us. But it's also what the world is going through now. And I truly believe that as bleak as our current political situation is, the world is moving to this direction. We are in that beginning. So if we have 500 years of dance of harmony and cooperation, you can see now that there are more women now in Congress, in Senate, in politics. There are more equal rights for gay and lesbian people. There are more acceptance of mixed marriages. The world is changing. And the old world, that Las Pachacuti, is still holding on with their nails and teeth, trying to hold on to old belief system, to what worked 500 years ago, but it's not no longer viable in the new part, new Pachakuti. That's where we are now. That's why what all these tyrants and dictators like Trump and Netanyahu and Erdogan and the guy in the Philippines and you know, North Korea, they are all representing that old masculine energy that are afraid of dying, afraid of losing their powers, and they are doing anything they can. But I'm optimistic that the condor and the eagle will fly together and be dance of cooperation and harmony, because there's no other choice. Because that world of masculine, that were also represented by the Christianity and Judaism religions and Muslim, all the like major religion, representing the past. It's representing old way of thinking. And we already know, I mean, there's such a drop in people going into organized religion. They are looking for alternatives. That's why our work is so important, because every year we have more and more people who are doing shamanic work. Every day we're doing more spiritual and what we call alternative, although I don't think that it's alternative. I think the other world is alternative. We do the real work, and we are reminding people that they are physical and spirit beings. They are masculine and feminine. That there must be a balance between the action and the heart, or the mind and the heart. It must, because too much of war does not give us anything. Too much of corporation doesn't give us anything. You give us death.
And here we are right now with the Sekopai tribe, the Sequoia people, who are such a small tribe, 3,000 people who have been pushed from their own lands as refugees here in Ecuador. And there's only 7 families who are still practicing the traditional ways and traditional medicines, and everybody else is in a small community that is really kind of run down, and the land is taken over by the oil companies. And we have this really special opportunity. You've been bringing groups down here for about 5 or 6 years now to this particular family that we've been staying with, that have so generously and beautifully opened themselves and continue to do that the more time that we are spending here. And at first they weren't so sure. They weren't so sure about inviting people in, because sometimes people have come in the past and there's so much history with being taken advantage of and people not really giving back and sharing. But here we are right now and having such a beautiful experience of sharing medicines and food and stories. And we also bring some technology and a sharing of assistance in a way to help them become more empowered and fight that front line, like the solar panels that have been brought here, which happened a little bit previously, but more buildings, more supplies that they might need, a horse to help carry wood from the forest back to the home. And what's happening here is that we all are, we're really touching each other. A couple nights ago, we were sitting around the table with our small group and with the family that we are here with, and we all shared songs together, mm-hmm. and we all sang together, and we see that they're opening more and more, the more that they trust us and see our intentions and see that we can be supportive, and that they also can share their medicine and their knowledge with us so that we can we can learn and heal and help other people and learn how to support them also. Itzhak, you have a wealth of experience and knowledge all throughout this area, throughout the Amazon, throughout the Andes, this whole region. And I'm wondering if there is anything you would like to share that we haven't talked about yet in this conversation.
Well, how many hours did we have?
we'll do more interviews. just this one for now.
I think that we need to be selfish.
Mm.
And selfish means that we'll have to learn how to provide for our children and our grandchildren a honorable life, a life of life, not life of death. And I think that if we can support the people who preserve the forest, the Amazon, the Andes, or any indigenous culture, I think that we are doing it for ourselves. We are doing it for our grandchildren, so they will have the animals that still exist, the water that still exists, the air, not for ourselves, but for the generations that will come after us. If we give up on the forest, if we give up of the water and the air, what are we leaving our children? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
A few bottles of plastic? Is that your legacy? And so I believe, and I salute those seven families who live here along the river and fighting the oil companies, and they still doing the Yahe ceremonies to remind people of the old tradition. They keep their language in spite of the Spanish language schools. They are dressing up and in their language. They do arts and crafts to keep their tradition, because these are all secrets. This is all ancient knowledge. Like today we were speaking about the curar, the blowgun. I was 25 years ago with the schwa, and then it was so simple and so accessible. And here, 25 years later, it's almost gone.
Hmm.
They don't even remember. The elder here, 80 years old, remember how to do it, but he did probably 50 years ago. So like how do you put two chunta trees together to create a blowgun? That technology is gone. Or how to cook great food that is nourishing from the Amazon? That's gone. Or how to work with the fish, or how to work with the animals here. All that balance between nature and human are gone, or almost disappearing. You know, 25 years ago, the people were still living in a ceremonial house, like the one we sleep in.
Mm-hmm.
That one, my group donated money to create their tradition. They never had that. So that is a great contribution. Contribution for us and for them too.
So I believe that the more I'm not talking about tourism. I'm talking about people who have consciousness, or people who have an appreciation for the Amazon. They're not people who come here to fish, or people come here as a, you know, tourists, you know, to eat potato chips and Coca-Cola. I'm talking about people who come here with consciousness of preserving the balance between the condor and the eagle, to support the people here who basically stand in the front line
of civilization. Without those people, if those people cave in to the slum that oil companies built here, all this tradition will be disappearing. All that languages, all that stories. They have such beautiful creation stories that are enriching our life in language, in literature, in imagination. The problem for us is that we think that the whole world needs to speak English. Languages are disappearing in a speed way.
Mm-hmm.
And every language in the Amazon that disappear, you know, like my teacher, Ipupiara, there were like 3,000 people. He died the last shaman of that tribe, or the last person to speak that language, the Uruwawu tribe. It's sad, because every language has different poetry, different imagery, different story about life. What are we going to talk about, Michael Jackson? How about a Hollywood movie? The Avatar? No, I mean, this is totally plastic culture. Talking about plastic culture, I think that we also are in the United States recognizing more and more that our culture is really hollow. That Native American have a much deeper tradition that answer more of the human yearning to be connected to nature, to be part of nature, to understand the climate, to understand the bird singing, to understand what it means to walk in forest and experience that energy, that the negative ions that are storming and feeling good, that the body needs that. So I think that there is more yearning to be human, and that's why we have more people now running to the forest to drink ayahuasca or to do other medicine, to experience something that is a bit more on the spiritual level, not just on the plastic, use it and throw it culture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my goal in bringing people here to the Amazon, and I do this for quite a few years, is to it's really hard to convince people to change their ways. It's easier when they come here and experiencing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, you know, you're sitting here in that little hut here and singing songs in all different languages, and seeing the joy that they have, and eating the yucca and the fish soup that is so delicious and so nourishing, and you really feel like the food here is totally real.
Mm-hmm.
It's whole.
So good.
It's it's delicious. It's nothing poor about it. The fish here is, everything is here is like wholesome. And to experience just sitting in, you know, right now where it's close to 10 o'clock at night and the river is flowing and it's dark and it's beautiful stars, and you're reconnecting with the cosmos and you sit in this quiet. That quiet is healing with all this oxygen here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people who come here the first two days, they get headaches because there's so much oxygen in their head. their nervous system really gets nourished and quiet down. Mm-hmm. And they truly start breathing.
They get back to pregnant time, right?
Exactly. All of a sudden you can sit hours and just watch the river and see sunrise and sunset, and the whole day pass by. And it's just, in so enriching you, so quieting your soul. It reminds you that you don't have to run from one appointment to the next with like crazy chicken with no head. It reminds you who you are, really. And I think that when you come here and you experience that, it changes the whole way you're living your life. You know, many people who came here to these trips did change their life. They sold their companies, they started non-profit organizations, one real estate company, a guy, two of them, they quit their corporate real estate companies and they started to build houses for the needy. So there's a lot of that change. You know, people change jobs, change locations. I mean, they see what's important and they don't want to give it up.
So they're bringing that back. They're bringing that heart back.
Yes. That's the beauty of that. And they will continue to enroll people into that consciousness and into that mission. I think that we are really in the front line now. Without Basilio's family and all the other seven families, the corporate palm oil will be grabbing this land in no time. They're fighting. And majorly they're fighting the evangelist. The Christian church is doing a horrible job here. They're converting indigenous people who live off the land peacefully for years. They fill them up with sins and Jesus and all that crap stuff. They separate families, the young people from the elders. You know, Don Cesario, he's 108, still the most powerful shaman of the Amazon. His son is priest. And his son now forbid him from doing ceremonies because it's evil. The evangelist here claimed that because of those people who are doing ceremonies here, COVID began. They believe that every time that we do ceremonies, there's a rainstorm that, you know, ruined their businesses there.
But really, we're connecting more with the earth and more with what is real, more of a spirit.
Yeah. And I hope that people who come here as a healer, the healer group, will bring this medicine to their clients. And their clients will experience that even in offices in Colorado or New York or London or Romania or whatever it is.
Wherever.
But even the touch of that would remind those people the importance of this medicine, to keep this medicine alive and the connection to nature. And then maybe they will come here one day. They'll experience this beauty. And they maybe commit themselves to help preserve nature in our world.
Let's hope so.
I hope so. I mean, that's what I'm doing it. Besides, I really love this family. This family is so joyful. It's so genuinely beautiful. I don't know how to even say that. The way they, the way they raise their children here, and the way they raise the trees here, and. The intimacy that they have with every plant that we think that it's just a weed, is a temple,
a life.
It's amazing. It's so beautiful.
Well, I certainly am inspired and changed by these experiences that we have, and so excited to bring more and more of it back to the land of the ego, and bring a little condor home to that home. This is home now too, and share, really create that bridge between the worlds.
I sure enjoy your company here.
Oh, it's so funny, Zach. It's the best. Well, thank you.
Wasn't the mud bath was great today?
Oh, we did a great mud bath today down by the river.
And the flower bath.
Oh, so sweet, so beautiful.
Yeah.
And so much fun. We have so much fun, too. Not always so serious.
No, I mean, I think that the cause is very serious.
Mm-hmm.
But the way to achieve that is with a lot of humor and fun and stories, mm-hmm. and joy. I mean, to fulfill all our senses with that beauty, with that amazing Amazon.
Life.
This river is so beautiful, the Agua Rica. So beautiful. Like life itself.
It is. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Itzhak. It's so great to have you here today for our interview, and we will certainly all try to pass on what we can and learn what we can to become more conscious and to connect that eagle and condor, bring a bridge into a new world, into a new culture that's already underway.
Amen.
Amen.
Aho.
Aho. Huyayay. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope you really enjoyed your visit to the jungle. And thank you again, Itzhak, for sharing your decades of insight from the Amazon and Andes. This wraps up our first Amazon mini-series that we kicked off the podcast with. And next week, we are going to take a pause from interviews, and I will introduce what this podcast is all about. Thank you so much to everyone who supports this show. You can donate through the link on the podcast player or at jennylepage.com. I appreciate it so much. Thank you, everyone. See you next time.